The leaves on the trees mark the end of the winter box office doldrums, and while the big summer movie season is not quite here, Hollywood has been rolling out some recommended films this spring. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. Quite a few remarkable films have slipped into theaters in advance of the action and comic book juggernauts, which will soon explode their way into theaters. To help me review and discuss a few recommended titles, both on the big and small screen, I'm happy to have back on the program cinephile and a voracious watcher of all manner of moving images, Oscar Garza. Good morning, Oscar.
Good morning, Chuck. Thanks.
Great to have you back. I should mention before we get going that you're going to be going off to Cinema Studies Master's Program in New York. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
And you recently started the Sun City Film Fans Facebook page where people can follow your almost daily musings on what you're watching.
That's true.
So people can log on there soon. We've watched a couple of films in the last week, two very different films. I wanted to start with Danny Collins, just out in theaters. What are some thoughts on that?
Yeah, Danny Collins, it's sort of like this great comedy drama about this. It's sort of like a quasi-true story based about a singer who, you know, discovers that he could have had this amazing opportunity with John Lennon, and he decides to turn his life around. He kind of doesn't think of himself as a true musician anymore, and so he decides to turn his life around. And it's a great, great showcase for Al Pacino. Again, a great cast like Jennifer Garner and Bobby Cannavale and Annette Bening. Great sort of like witty deadpan humor if you're into that sort of thing. And it's a really kind of charming type of movie.
This is the first film by
Dan Fogelman. Who co-wrote Crazy Stupid Love and was involved in Tangled, I believe, as well.
Yeah, a number of animated films like Bolt and Tangled and Cars wrote the screenplays. So he's been writing screenplays for quite a while, but this is his first foray as a writer and director.
Yeah.
I love the cast.
You know,
we actually saw this film together recently, and it's not one of those great films. It felt like a film that maybe was initially poised for a fall release, maybe last fall, just because of the worth of the cast, but got pushed into April, which is not a time but that you would normally associate this kind of film coming out. One thing to comment on, though, is I think we both noticed that we were the youngest people in the audience.
Definitely.
which is one of the points of the film is this is a mature – about maturity. It's about
– getting old and you know
– looking back.
Yeah, and sort of like reinventing yourself in a type of way,
Redemption.
Yeah.
Some heavy topics, but as you mentioned, it's also a comedy. I found its humor extremely organic, which was refreshing because it's not an overt comedy, but there is humor in the situations, even though they're oftentimes difficult situations with these characters. Did everything work about this film for you?
For what it tries to do, I thought so. Yeah, I mean, like it's – at times it's overly charming, but there's sort of like a self-awareness to it, especially in someone like Christopher Plummer, who is just kind of, you know, he's so deadpan and so he brought a lot of that self-awareness to the story, into the film.
Christopher Plummer, we should note, plays Al Pacino's manager in the film. I found Pacino fascinating. This is really one of his most reined-in performances, I think, of recent memory.
Yeah.
There's none of those explosive pyrotechnic scenes where he just goes off. He's usually slumped down and you know, really shows his age in this film, suitable for a character facing the kinds of things he's facing. But one small qualm is that, you know, he plays this fading rock star, and we're reminded of that several times over. But at least with the few performances, musical performances we see in the film for his fans, he's really more of a Neil Diamond character than a Neil Young or Mick Jagger character. And of course, one of the subtexts of the film is that his fans won't let him evolve beyond that pop star. He feels like he has great music in him, but he can't move beyond that. I kind of felt as an audience that Pacino himself is kind of in that mode where we won't accept him in any other roles than those big over-the-top films that he's used to.
It almost gets to a kind of meta level at that point where it's sort of commenting on, and in that case, it's sort of like a perfectly cast choice for Pacino as well,
To Dan Fogelman, the writer-director's credit, though, this amazing cast, Al Pacino, Annette Bening, Jennifer Garner, Christopher Plummer, and others. Everybody seems to shine and have their moments. He's very egalitarian in doling out great scenes to everyone in the cast. And it's just such a pleasure to watch fine actors doing fine work.
Definitely.
Great film, good film, recommended?
Definitely. If you're like in a matinee type of way, watch it on home video or matinee. That's what I would do, yeah.
Ultimately, for me, this is an example of just a good, solid film that just works all the way around.
Definitely.
And everyone really shares in that accomplishment, I think. And the fact that Dan Fogelman can navigate a story and cast like this bodes well for his future, so we should watch him. I should note this is rated R for language, a little bit of nudity, and some drug use. Yeah. He is a fading rock star.
After all.
As a segue to our next film, I want to say, you know, both Danny Collins and It Follows are both films about bad decisions and their consequences at a certain level, but targeted at much different audiences. The horror film It Follows is a second feature film from David Robert Mitchell. And while it's a horror film, I was really refreshingly taken aback because the trailers all suggested this was the most terrifying film of the year. And while it has its frightening moments,
definitely,
that is not the main thing that drives this film.
No.
This is a film that I think will appeal to people maybe who like to dip their toe in the horror genre without being overwhelmed by gore. It's a horror story, of course. It's developed around a youth-centered, strong nuclear family made up of college co-eds who find themselves rallying to the aid of a friend who's played amazingly by Maika Monroe, someone to watch, a young up-and-comer who's really traumatized and stalked by a supernatural force in what you might say is a sexually transmitted curse.
Definitely, yeah.
Devotees, I think, of the 70s and 80s horror films genres will sense a kindred spirit in It Follows. You know, it certainly conjures up titles like Halloween and A Nightmare on Elm Street. And suitably in that line, It Follows is set in an autumnal suburban landscape that feels like every place and generic, very recognizable. But it's also a little bit out of time. It's got a really great feel to the film. You're never quite sure what year it is, though it probably is the late 70s, early 80s. There's no cell phones, judging from the cars, the color schemes. But it gives it a really nice dreamlike quality, I think, that it's not rooted in any particular time. But as you know, I know you're a horror film fan, sex and death were usually closely linked in these horror films of that era. But this is really a new take on the genre that's inspired by, I think, some of those favorite films and not slavishly trying to parody or remake those films. It's wholly new in and of itself. The characters, which are this tightly knit group of probably 19, 20-somethings that rally around this young woman who's found herself the target of this curse. There's almost no adults in the film, and we rarely see anyone outside of this unit. What did you make of that?
I love that decision. It reminded me of Halloween and how he treated Carpenter treated like the adults in those situations. Mm-hmm. And it's just a teen or young person film, and you really see that. It really conveys that so well and so beautifully, I thought, that it's just a story about being young and, you know, making dumb decisions and making or, you know, the consequences of making those decisions as well.
Yes, and the film dwells as much, if not more, on those consequences and the decisions that these young people have to make, because one of the tricks in the film is that the only way to get rid of the curse, or at least you can pass it on through having sex with someone else, and then that person is cursed. But it's not an automatic thing that they do. The main protagonist, another hallmark of the 70s and 80s horror films, is we have this strong female protagonist, which is also refreshing in this day and age.
Yeah.
But she really grapples with what that means, the responsibility of that. Can she just deal with it herself, or does she ultimately want to pass that down the line?
Yeah, there's a great moral debate to that. Mm-hmm. And I love that she struggles with that. And there's, as you said, that element of like complete paranoia on her part as well. And she struggles with that idea, but she also, you know, has to live with that idea and, you know, try to pass it on and live, of course, try to survive this horrifying curse.
You know, the other thing is there's no rationale for this curse.
No.
The film spends no time telling us why it exists, what this ghoul that's stalking her is, why it can only walk, which is part of the dread that's built up in this film, is that this is something that just slowly stalks you. You can get ahead of it for a while.
It's so eerie.
But not forever. And we're right there with those characters because we're bewildered too why it's happening.
And he – I love that he doesn't let you look away. I mean, in one of those shots, you are right there with her as she's experiencing this complete fear, and he doesn't let you look away. It reminds you of, you know, like the stuff that Stanley Kubrick used to do with The Shining, or John Carpenter as well.
Amazing film score, a very ominous modern electronic score by Rich Vreeland, and incredible cinematography, use of the widescreen, also – looking back to maybe the films of John Carpenter. Yeah. So, but again, inspired by these great films of the 70s and 80s and directors, but not slavishly trying to replicate them.
Yeah,
I think this is one of those excellent small horror films that keeps its curse vague and keeps us on the edge of our seat. And because of that, its vagueness, I think it really allows the audience to put its own latent fears into the film. You know, just this these unstoppable, always pursuing ghouls of the film are a great surrogate for anything that we feel we can't get away from or escape, and really the inevitability of death that everyone is grappling with here. Fresh Take, great film, also rated R. You and I have also been talking a lot about other things that are available to us. We've been discussing theatrical films, but we definitely live in a world where we have access to just about everything now through our televisions. Quick take on something people might want to look at streaming-wise?
Yeah, if you're into action type of shows or superhero type of shows, Daredevil, which just premiered on Friday, April 10th, it's a great take on the superhero comic book genre, and it's a really fun, action-packed sort of show.
And because it's Netflix, all episodes are available, so you can stay up all night and watch every one of them.
Yeah.
I keep thinking that Marvel and superhero films and shows are going to come to an end at some point and just collapse on their own weight. But Daredevil really extends that again. It won't be the tripping point here. So
probably not.
Excellent. I would also pick another Netflix original. It's a British production called The Fall, which stars Gillian Anderson, that a lot of people will know from her X-Files days. But she's been living in London for a number of years. And it's notable for a lot of reasons. One is Gillian Anderson. She's just fantastic in it. But this is one of those police procedurals about a serial killer, and she plays a inspector sent from London to Belfast to track down the serial killer and work with the locals. But it really splits its time. Unlike a lot of the procedurals we're used to, it splits its time 50-50 between the police investigation and the actual serial killer. And we really get in his mind, his life, how he's trying to lead a normal, seemingly normal life while also doing these things on the side. But the hallmark for me was right from the get-go, this is a female character we've not seen before. The writing is impeccable. She's allowed to do things as a female character that and say things and upend the gender and power dynamics of the environment she's in brilliant ways, I think. So I highly recommend The Fall. Well, Oscar, it's great to see you. Thanks for coming in and chatting with us about some highly recommended films and lots to watch, even though it's only April.
Thank you for having me.
We've been discussing four recommended films and shows. The aging rock star makes amends film, Danny Collins. The quietly effective horror movie, It Follows. The Netflix original productions, Marvel's latest series, Daredevil. And the British psychological police thriller, The Fall, starring Gillian Anderson. A final program note, the Sunset Film Society will hold its monthly screening and lunch at Artovino's Desert Crossing in Sunland Park tomorrow at noon. This month's film selection is the incomparable Technicolor musical Singing in the Rain. The screening is free. On Film's producer is Norma Martinez. I'm Charles Horak. Thank you for listening to On Film.